If you're innovating,
creating,
or making a difference,
this show is for you.
Welcome to Over Coffee.
I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
And so the wage for workers who earn tips in the United States is still stuck at $2.13 an hour after 23 years, which means that in 43 states in the United States, when you leave a tip, you're actually paying the wage of the worker.
Attorney and activist Saru Jayaraman is co-founder and co-director of Restaurant Opportunities Centers United, a nationwide nonprofit dedicated to advocating and providing opportunities for restaurant workers that is actually the first of its kind. And an important part of their mission is educating the general public and providing resources that show how one consumer can make a difference. Saru, who is an associate professor at UC Berkeley, is also the director of the Food Labor Research Center there, and she's the author of the book Behind the Kitchen Door, a study of current restaurant working conditions. Saru, what do you remember best from your growing up years in East Los Angeles?
Well, I actually grew up in Whittier, which is definitely east, southeast of LA and very close to East LA, but it's not quite East LA, and grew up not myself working class, but went to a school and all of my friends were working class, and definitely observed how their family struggled, and, you know, just that people were not really able to achieve the American dream based on lots of disparities, educational, racial, socioeconomic disparities that have kept a lot of people in America from being able to achieve their full potential.
How did you first get involved and become an activist against what you saw?
I was always involved in some form or another since childhood, you know, really feeling this injustice that I saw all around me and wanting to do something about it. But I got involved in this particular cause that I'm working on right now as a result of 9/11. On 9/11, 2001, there was a restaurant at the top of the World Trade Center on Tower 1, and on that morning, 73 workers died, and about 250 workers lost their jobs, and about 13,000 restaurant workers lost their jobs in the surrounding, in Manhattan, basically, in the months and weeks that followed. And so I had been working for several years as an attorney and organizer for low-wage workers, and when 9/11 happened and these workers died and the survivors lost their jobs at the restaurant, the union that was inside that restaurant called me and called one of the survivors from Windows on the World, a waiter named Sekak Mamdu, and asked us if we could start a little relief center in the aftermath of the tragedy that would initially provide support to all these workers and the families of the victims. But within a few weeks and months of opening, we've quickly turned into something else because restaurant workers never had had a place to go until we opened our doors, and so we were pretty quickly overwhelmed with cries for help from restaurant workers all over New York City and then all over the country. And over the last 12 years since 9/11, we've grown now into a national restaurant workers organization with about 13,000 restaurant worker members in 32 cities, about 100 employer members, restaurant owners who are doing the right thing, providing good wages and good working conditions, and several thousand consumer members.
Let's look at some of the victories you've had and also at some of the restaurants that are doing the right thing.
We've won actually about 20 campaigns against exploitation in high-profile restaurant companies using a combination of litigation and worker organizing and community organizing. And we've won back about $10 million in stolen tips and wages. And we've won policy changes for workers in these companies. And these companies have really done the right thing in now providing their workers not only with their rights, but also with better wages and benefits and better working conditions. So they've really gone above and beyond. And that's what our, what we call high road employer partners do as well. There are, as I said, about 100 employers around the country that have joined ROC and have formed an alternative national restaurant association called RAISE. And they range from, you know, high profile chefs. Tom Colicchio, Star of Top Chef, is part of the association, all the way down to small mom-and-pop restaurants around the country that are doing the right thing, providing outstanding wages and working conditions to their workers, and actually doing it because they see that their workers end up staying longer, are more loyal, have better, you know, productivity as a result of better wages and working conditions.
I didn't know about Raise until you said that just now. Can people find out the ethical restaurants on that website?
Yes, actually, we put out a diner's guide, an app, every year called the ROC National Diner's Guide. You can find it on our website, Rock United, or on the website that we created for consumers in particular called The Welcome Table, thewelcometable.net. You can also download it on your iPhone or your smartphone. It's called the ROC National Diner's Guide, and it tells you the ratings of the 150 most popular restaurant companies in America, how they're doing on wages and benefits, but it also tells you the award-winning restaurant companies that we've given awards to for their great treatment of workers.
What would you say shocked you the most in the early days of ROC that you didn't know about the conditions restaurant workers faced?
Oh, I didn't know anything about the conditions. I was an oblivious consumer, even though I had been fighting for workers' rights for a couple of years and, in fact, had represented and organized with restaurant workers. I really didn't understand the industry and the conditions that these workers experienced. So, for example, I had no idea that in 43 states in the United States, when we leave a tip, it's actually not a tip. It is the wage itself. And that's because of the industry association, which is called the National Restaurant Association. We call them the other NRA. And they, you know, the thing is that the restaurant industry is the second largest and absolute fastest growing sector of the U.S. economy. It's over 10 million workers nationwide. One in 12 Americans actually works in the restaurant industry. And yet it happens to be the absolute lowest paying employer in the United States. Literally every year, the U.S. Department of Labor puts out a list of the 10 lowest paying jobs in America. And every year, 7 of the 10 are restaurant jobs. And all of that is due to the power, the lobbying power and the money of the National Restaurant Association, which, as I said, we call the other NRA, and which really is made up of the Fortune 500 chains. All the chains from Applebee's to Olive Garden to Red Lobster all make up the National Restaurant Association. Back in 1996, under the leadership of Herman Cain, the other NRA struck a deal with Congress saying that they wouldn't oppose an increase in the overall minimum wage as long as the minimum wage for tipped workers stayed frozen forever. And so the wage for workers who earn tips in the United States is still stuck at $2.13 an hour after 23 years, which means that in 43 states in the United States, when you leave a tip, you're actually paying the wage of the worker, because essentially the industry has said to consumers and legislators, we shouldn't have to pay our own workers' wages. Customers should essentially have to pay our workers' wages for us. And that's what's going on. There are 7 states in the U.S., California included, that have the same wage for tipped and non-tipped workers and have for decades. And we find they're actually doing better. Their restaurant industries are growing faster. They're more successful in those states where tipped workers are actually paid a livable, decent wage. But in 43 states in the United States, it continues to be the case that we just allow this industry to get away with the worst boondoggle you can possibly imagine, which is essentially to say they shouldn't have to pay their own workers.
And when you say tipped workers, you're not talking necessarily about you put $5 on the table and that goes directly to your server, are you?
No. Every tip you leave is shared by many, many workers, not just the servers, but also the bussers, the runners, often the hosts. Sometimes that's illegal, but nevertheless, hosts sometimes get included. Bartenders are included in that bar back. So many workers share the tip that you leave, and sometimes management even takes a cut. In fact, our estimates are that 1 in 5 workers has their tips stolen by management. And so you have literally 6 million workers in America in all these different positions living off $2, $3, or $4 an hour depending on the state they're in, and our tips, which we don't think of as a wage, going to pay all of those workers' wages. What's worse is that these are not kids. These are not, you know, the wealthy servers you might see at a steakhouse or a fine dining restaurant. 70% of tipped workers in America are women, and the vast majority work in restaurants like Applebee's and Olive Garden and Red Lobster, and their median wage, including tips, is $8.70 an hour. They suffer from 3 times the poverty rate of the rest of the U.S. workforce and use food stamps at double the rate, which means the women who put food on our tables in America can't actually afford to put food on their own family's tables.
That is a sick irony right there. With the women working in the restaurant, you also make the point in your book that, unfortunately, racial segregation is alive and well, and so is sexual discrimination.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, this whole system I've told you about, in which we're essentially paying the workers tips, falls hardest on both people of color and women, because people of color tend to work in more casual restaurants where tips are less, and women tend to work also in more casual restaurants, diners, and the types of restaurants I mentioned, Applebee's, IHOP. What's even worse for women is that the very fact of having to rely on the customer for your income rather than your employer essentially makes you vulnerable to confront the worst sexual harassment of any industry in the United States. So 7% of American women work in restaurants, but 37% of all sexual harassment complaints to the EEOC come from the restaurant industry. And that's because women have to put up with whatever a customer might do to them, however they may touch them or treat them or talk to them. They must tolerate it because their income is coming from the customer, and the customer is always right. And furthermore, it forces women to make themselves into sexual objects. We have any number of women who've told us, my manager told me to go home, dress more sexy, show more cleavage, and come back so that I could earn more money and tips and sell more food. And that kind of forcing women to become sexual objects also makes them vulnerable, not just to sexual harassment from customers, but also from coworkers and management. So basically what we have is a system in which an employer saying, I'm not going to pay your wages, the customer will, forces women to be exposed to the worst sexual harassment of any industry in the United States.
And pretty much telling her, you don't have a choice, this is it.
That's right. That's right. And I'm not just talking about Hooters. I'm really talking about Denny's and IHOP and Applebee's. These are the places where most women work. This is one of the largest employers of women. And women of all different kinds. 6 million women are in this industry for their lifetimes, but many more millions of young women go through this industry as their first job in high school, college, or graduate school. And this is how we are exposing young women to the world of work and telling young women what is tolerable and acceptable in the workplace. So I've been on a 200 or 300 city, book tour, and everywhere I go, women come up to me and say, I'm an IBM executive, I'm a corporate lawyer, I've been sexually harassed recently on the job, but I didn't do anything about it because it was never as bad as it was when I was a young woman working in restaurants. And so we are basically educating women, young women, about what is acceptable in the workplace through an industry that is the absolute worst in terms of forcing women to sell themselves to get their income from customers.
And we're telling them as they become professionals, it could be worse. That is hair-raising right there.
Yes.
Tell me about your Colors restaurants. I understand ROC created two of them and have more in the works.
That's right. So we do many things. We organize workers, employers, and consumers to try to change the situation I've just talked about. And we've had a great deal of success in moving these issues. But we also try to actually do things that set up models and examples for how things could be different. So one is, I already told you, working with high road employers who are doing the right thing and doing things differently. The other is opening our own worker-owned restaurants called Colors, one in New York, one in Detroit. We're opening a third one in Washington, D.C., and more are on the way. And in all of these places, Colors is both a restaurant open to the public where workers that are part of our membership work, but they're also a location they're basically schools where we train over 1,000 workers a year to move up the ladder to livable wage jobs in the industry, which are fine dining, waitstaff, and bartending positions. We train workers in fine dining service and bartending, particularly people of color and women who don't have access to those good jobs. We train them to move from a casual restaurant or from a dishwasher position into a fine dining service position. And we've had a lot of success in helping these workers move up the ladder, and then some of them end up working at Colors. So it's been a tremendously helpful thing to have a physical space where we can experiment with what's right. So, for example, we developed ergonomic guidelines for the industry using Colors as a laboratory to figure out what is best for workers' bodies. We've done a lot of things at Colors that have helped us understand how the industry could function better. So Colors has become an incubator, a model, a school. It serves multiple functions.
And when does the Washington one open?
We're hoping by the end of the year, latest early next year. Yep.
Excellent. I'm hoping you'll get one of those out here in Southern California. Keeping my fingers crossed here. As you go forward and work for equitable conditions for servers, cooks, etc., is there one person's story that stays with you that galvanizes you for what you do?
Well, I'll just tell one that I heard recently that really has touched me. One of our members is a woman who works at a restaurant, a casual restaurant in Corpus Christi, Texas. And we invited her to speak at a Senate press conference in Washington, D.C., where we are helping to fight for legislation that would raise the minimum wage for tipped workers and ultimately eliminate this system altogether of tipped workers earning less than the regular minimum wage. So our member went to the Senate press conference, and she got up in front of the senators. And in fact, Senator Gillibrand from New York State later told me that she remembered this woman's story, and it was very striking to her as well. But our member got up there and said, "Senators, what would it be like for you if your income depended on the happiness of the people you serve?" And she said, "You know, that's true for me because my income depends on the happiness of the people I serve. I have to put up with a man groping my butt every day to feed my 4-year-old son at night." And that's the case for millions of women across America simply because most of us are asleep on this issue, don't even know that tipped workers earn $2, $3, or $4 an hour, that they put up with this kind of abuse, and that their income actually comes from our tips. So I think the story speaks to so many things, and most of all, it speaks to the need for all of us to get educated, educate others, and help to change these laws.
And if people would like to take the next steps, besides checking out your restaurant guide and besides checking out the welcome table, what are some of the steps that you yourself take when you go into a restaurant?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So there are three things we ask of everybody who eats out. The first is to try to read the book Behind the Kitchen Door, which is available on that website, thewelcometable.net, to just get educated on these issues and educate more people on these issues. The second is, as you mentioned, on the site is the app and the guide. And this speaks to your question of what do I do when I eat out. You know, we didn't create the guide and the app to tell you where to eat and where not to eat. That's actually not the purpose of the guide because there aren't enough restaurants out there doing it differently for you to eat only at those restaurants. Rather, we'd like you to eat wherever you're going to eat, and that's what I do. I just eat out wherever I'm going to eat out. But as often as possible, I speak up at the end of my meal, not to the server who has no power, but to the manager or the owner at the end of my meal. I go up to the manager or owner. I say, "Love the food. I love the service. I just want you to know that the criteria listed in this app," and I show them the app, "are actually really important to me. I care about whether workers are making a livable wage, whether they have paid sick days, whether they're treated, you know, equitably regardless of their race or gender. And I want to see your restaurant fare well in this guide. I want to keep coming here." And I've never had a negative response from a manager or owner when I express those values. And we feel like that's critical because expressing those kinds of values is what has changed restaurant menus in America to include local and organic. And, I mean, God, every restaurant has kale these days. You know, and that's like very recent. 10 years ago, you know, restaurants said they could never afford local and organic and didn't even know what kale was, you know. So I think change can happen. It's all about consumers speaking up every time they eat out. That's the most important thing.
Where do we stand right now on legislation for paid sick days and the minimum wage for tipped workers?
Yes, so there are state fights happening all around the country. There's paid sick days battles happening. We just won paid sick days for restaurant workers in Washington, D.C. earlier this year. Paid sick days has been won in multiple states around the country, and there are ongoing fights in Massachusetts, in Illinois. There's an ongoing battle in Florida. There's ongoing battles all over the country to win paid sick days. But there's actually a ballot measure on the ballot in Oakland, California. And these are all local people who just decided we need paid sick days to ensure that when we eat out or not being served by unhealthy workers. And so that's moving around the country more at the state and local level than at the federal level. With regard to minimum wage, we've got a ballot measure moving in Washington, D.C., in our nation's capital, where the tip minimum wage is $2.77 an hour. There we've got a ballot measure to actually eliminate the lower wage for tipped workers and bring tipped workers up to the same wage as everyone else. We were involved in that fight in Michigan, and although the wage went up, we're going to keep fighting to make sure it goes up even higher. There are state fights going on in Massachusetts and many other states. In Oakland, again, California, we've got a ballot measure moving to raise the minimum wage here. The minimum wage is moving in lots of states and localities as well, but it is also moving at the federal level. There's a federal bill that would raise the overall minimum wage to $10.10 and the minimum wage for tipped workers to 70% of that, which is a step forward, but what we really need is to eliminate the difference between the minimum wage for tipped workers and non-tipped workers, which is why we are moving things at the state and federal level in hopes that Congress will follow and eventually eliminate this system altogether.
So people should write to their Congress representatives, definitely.
Absolutely. And in fact, you can do that on our website at rockunited.org. You can just put in where you're located, and it will allow you to send a letter to your congressperson. Or on the welcometable.net, you can just sign a petition that will go to Congress saying, please eliminate the tip minimum wage.
Saru, as we wrap up here, and thank you for your time, if people could only learn one thing from you about innovating and making a difference, what would you want them to take away from your experiences with ROC?
I think I would say the most important thing is to be willing to learn from the people who are most affected. And so a lot of times people who think of themselves as innovators, you know, tend to be entrepreneurial, which is great, but sometimes entrepreneurialism leads to a bit of self-initiation, and which has its advantages. But I have learned so much from thousands of restaurant workers across the country, and everything that we've created at Rock is as a result of learning from restaurant workers and listening to their ideas. Colors was not my idea. It was the idea of my co-founder who worked in the industry for 17 years. You know, so much of what we do has come from workers getting together and saying, this is what we need, and then coming up with solutions together to the problems that people face. So I think the number one thing I would say is to listen to the people who are most affected.
Saru, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You and I have been listening to Saru Jayaraman, co-founder and co-director of Restaurant Opportunity Centers United and author of the book Behind the Kitchen Door. You can find out more about the work of ROC United and download their National Diner's Guide and app on their website, rocunited.org. That's rocunited.org. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.